spontaneity into your otherwise maybe routines.
I know that for me, what Jake did is we'd go on bike rides, and he brought a couple of cold beers in his bike, and when we stopped at a lovely lookout spot, we could sit and chill and enjoy the view with a cold beer. Although, don't tell the bylaw officers so that they hunt me down. But no, I get what you mean. It's really about the intention, the focus of time and energy. I really hope that folks take that away. You know, I think what you've tapped into is, you know, we are a gay news show, and gay news has not been great recently. There's been a lot of very not good news, and I think that conversations like this that focus on fun, that focus on romance and love and putting yourself out there and reciprocating is a very truly welcome break from some of the more morbid things that we cover. How can folks, you know, find you, reach out to you, get involved? You know, how can we send people your way to learn a little bit more about flirting than what we've managed to cover so far?
Sure. Well, this has been fantastic. And really, thank you for allowing me to be here and just speak to your listeners. I'll kind of just end, if I can, with one of my Instagram posts today was about, you know, one of the biggest topics I hear is like, you know, coming on too strong or being too much, that kind of thing. And so my message today, and I'll just relay this here, is to not play it too small, to really feel like you can go out there and ask for what you want. And I know it's going to be hard and like you're probably going to feel anxious and scared about it, but it's okay, because just with practice, you'll really start to show up more fully and authentically, right? Is really sort of the mission with that message. And you can find me at Benjamin Camrus across or on TikTok and Instagram. That's primarily where I show up. So I would love to see you over there.
Yep. And just for our listeners, that is Camras. Yes. Benjamin Camrus, Camras. Thank you so much for joining us. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation today. I'm sure Sebastian did as well. We will be jumping to our first track. This one's by the Darcys and features the incredibly talented, I say features, it'll be evident when you hear the track, but there is a great section from the incredible Canadian comedian Mae Martin in this track by the Darcys. It's called You Up, as in Are You Up, by the Darcys featuring Mae Martin, and we will be back just after this.
It's 6 a.m. I gotta catch a flight in the city just for the night. And I was thinking that you just might wanna catch up. Nostalgic, but we're nostalgic, but we're out of time. Guess
I've been thinking about you. I've been in kind of a weird place. I don't really know what I'm looking for right now, but I did make a list in my phone of just like bullet points, things we could talk about. Mainly interesting facts, cosmology, you know, famous quotes, things that I'm into. I'm not really seeing anyone right now, seriously, but I did save your number in my phone as unknown caller, just because I'm kind of a private person. I like to, you know, keep my worlds separate, but I did order you a book online, actually, but oh shit, I'll call you in 15.
Hello and welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And, I'm just reading the message that you just messaged there. Uh-huh. You're saying TikTok skews female or male? Male? I'm not sure which one you meant here.
Female, yeah. I was wondering about that, because if Benjamin was saying his listeners are not listeners, the people who interact with him are mostly women. I knew that TikTok skewed female, but it's actually not as much as I thought. I think anything within the 60-40 region is basically half and half, but yeah. So yes.
Well, I think it's a very interesting...
I'm a numbers guy, sorry.
yeah, you got caught up in the numbers. If anyone wants to flirt with Sebastian, just start mentioning some statistics. And that will certainly create both excitement and tension.
Believe. I am dating.
Yeah, this is true. Well, I mean, I think that there is always flirting. If you want to know what flirting looks like when you're not dating, go and try and buy a car. there are definitely scenarios where flirting is very much a thing that happens. I was actually at a party just this party. It was a strange pronunciation. I was at a party this past weekend for a friend of mine who turned 30. And lots of gay folks there, young gay folks around their 30s, attending. And we were talking about, I don't know, there was a wide variety of things. Billy Porter showed up.
Billy Porter.
Billy Porter, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I didn't say hi because I thought it'd be weird given that I'm with the media and it was very much not an interview appropriate venue. As an aside. But no, what brought me up is we were talking about PFLAG. I think they were discussing different movies and things, and I'd said that one movie that always makes me cry, I mean, gross, like... You know, like guttural, full body, you know, did your mother just die level of unsexy weeping is Prayers for Bobby. You know, I think there's a couple of like movies where like the dog might die at the end and everyone's like, oh my God, that was so sad. Prayers for Bobby is a devastating movie in that it just hits in a certain way, especially for queer folks. It is essentially about the woman that helped found PFLAG. And this came up because the 30-year-old in the room did not know what PFLAG was. Oh, I think we were talking about Stonewall and how Stonewall is obviously it's from New York. Stonewall was a pub in New York, like it is still a pub in New York. And then there's American history. And I'm like, well, you know, what about the Operation Soap in Toronto or the fire in the bar in Montreal or Alain Marceau in Ottawa?
Or the coal miner strike.
In the valleys of Wales.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Great film called Pride featuring, I want to say, Bill Nighy. Is one of the lead actors in that. Excellent.
It was a real historical event where the gay community in Manchester, I think, supported the coal miners.
Yeah.
London? Okay, yeah. During Gays for the mines. Thatcher years. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
nobody
yeah.
liked Thatcher, yeah. so. But yeah, no, they didn't know who PFLAG was, and that floored me. I was... You know when people just feign amazement that someone doesn't know something? Like, you don't know XYZ? Mm-hmm. Except this I was genuinely a million times surprised because I've been at Pride parades and you know this bank goes by and everyone's like yay, and then that bank goes by and everyone's like yay, community group goes by and you're like yay, you know, there's a bit more authenticity, and then PFLAG goes by and some people are crying. People are going out and getting mum hugs. You know, it's it's when PFLAG goes by, it hits deep. It is it really cuts to the core. So for those of folks who are like, what is PFLAG? You've said it 37 times and not mentioned it. I once listened to a show on this station where they were talking about a TV show from the mid-2000s, mentioned the show name once at the start and never again, so I won't do that mistake. PFLAG is Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. PFLAG.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it started off, I forget exactly when it started off, I want to say 70s or 80s.
Okay, yeah.
And it was as a result of, you know, it's when the gay rights movement was starting to happen, it's, you know, there's the AIDS crisis happening, and at that time, and to, I'm not going to say, well, I'm going to say to a much lesser degree now, but not entirely not so. A lot of, that sentence made no sense, but a lot of gay folks, when they came out to their parents, they would be kicked out of the house, they would be made homeless, and that's on the light side of what could happen. You know, the horror stories of what happened in familial settings when queer folks came out, you know, from the 80s all the way through to maybe the mid-2000s. Not a cheerful moment in time. But PFLAG often stepped up. They're like, look, lawmakers aren't listening to the flamboyant gays who are prancing around with a bit too much sparkle in their step. But the dad of this one, who is a lawmaker, is going to step up and advocate. Or the mum of this one, who's been a psychiatrist for 20 years. Or the sister of this one, who's a nurse that's seen all these men in the ER for during the AIDS crisis, is going to step up and intervene. It's the friends and the family of those who could, who stood in to help. One of the things that they would do is if you came out to your son or daughter, you know, let's not forget that coming out is, and we were talking about fantasies and the delusions earlier, you know, as you're, you know, if, when you're a child, your parents have some expectations of what's going to happen. You know, maybe you're going to have kids. Maybe they're going to be grandparents. Maybe they're going to be, you know, these things and that things will happen. And when you say something quite as significant as I am a homosexual, all of their preconceived future for you stops in that moment and needs to be readjusted. And that can be a shock. That can take a hot minute to get past. A lot of gay folks see that reaction and see it as very negative and you know, it spirals down a bit of a hole. But, I mean, let's give people a bit of space here. People have, especially with their own children, they have a bit of an expectation of what might happen, what might develop. And when things don't align, people need a minute to reconfigure how they might see their future. But
that also works for the people who are coming up, by the way, because PFLAG has helped with... helping on basically every angle of this. One of the common stories that I heard actually was people who assumed that one parent would accept them and the other would reject them, and it turned out to be the opposite. The parent they thought would reject them was like, whatever, dude, just do your own thing, don't hurt nobody. And the other one who they thought would accept them just flew off the handle. So there was sort of like counseling involved and support and peer support. I mean, there was that sort of like, for lack of a better term, institutionalization of allyship.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It gave people at a moment in their life where they are the most vulnerable, where your home and your family becomes precarious and you don't know what's going to happen next, PFLAG would step in and just be there. And it wasn't, you know, a service provider who went through some training. It is the mother of. It is the sister of. The father of. It's people who know that experience and can live with it. I have so much love and respect for anyone who volunteers their time with PFLAG to be able to do for that for others. And PFLAG now does a lot of folks with work with trans folks and trans families. Likewise, just navigating what is very often a very, very, very difficult moment. So when PFLAG matches through, the Pride Parade, people in the audience are thinking about not just, oh, this is another bank walking by, yay. They're thinking about coming out to their family. They're thinking about what that meant, what happened, how it could have been better, how it could have been worse. And seeing, you know, proud mum on a banner being marched down, you know, it does make you bring a tear to your eye, and it is definitely powerful. So I felt aghast that PFLAG was unknown, let alone not given the reverence that they very much do. They are, in terms of queer history, especially Western North American queer history, absolutely pivotal.
Yeah. And a squeaky clean history too. I don't think I've ever heard any stories of like an executive director or any kind of like management running off with millions of dollars in donated money or getting involved in labor scandals or sexual harassment scandals or whatever. It's one of those institutions that has a very simple message, and they've stuck to it, and they haven't gotten into nonsense, and there's no internal bullying. It's just basically, what can we do to make other people who are uncomfortable more comfortable with their new reality peer to peer?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? And the fact that, like, as you say, it is just another mom. It's not, you know, a 2S LGBTQISSII plus advocate, you know, telling you what the latest trend in queer and gender studies is. It's just another mom who's like, yep, I was there too. Let me tell you about that. There's something about that that's very grounding.
Absolutely. And I saw a Reddit post just last week. It was in the TIFU thread.
What is TIFU?
I'm not going to say what TIFU is. You know what TIFU is. But I'm not going to say it. It was in this thread, and it's like, today I messed up, and, apparently there's this dad who's had a son who's like 15, 16, and his friend, for our listeners here, these are very, very heavy, dramatic air quotes, friend, came over, and it was pretty obvious that they were together, and the dad genuinely thought that the son knew that he knew, and, you know, everyone was super chill until... Mm-hmm. Dramatically, one day, the son comes out, and dad, being genuinely surprised, reverts to dad humor and goes, "That's gay," which, by the way, as a punchline, hilarious.
Yeah,
but may not have did not land to this poor gay kid who was having a pivotal life moment in coming out to his dad to be told that's gay. So you know, it's like, we don't always navigate them in the best way.
Well, I mean, the my favorite coming out story ever, again, that I read on like Nightmare Stories on Reddit, back when I was actually on Reddit, but somebody came out to their father, and their father responded, "Hello, gay, I'm dad."
Yep, that's another classic. I would
classic. Yeah,
I would recommend, I mean, maybe not either. If your son or daughter's thinking of coming out, maybe don't leave with "that's gay" or "hi, gay, I'm dad." Pro tips today, that's what we have.
And, you know, keep it chill.
Absolutely. But, basically, I mean, I think the key piece here is, there is so much anxiety and mm-hmm. so much caution and concern. I thought maybe we could move through this show without touching on too many news stories, but I think this one does relate really nicely to the story that came out just on Tuesday last week from the educational secretary in Saskatchewan. They're rolling out a whole bunch of new policies, much in line with what we saw recently in New Brunswick. That has led to resignations within the ruling party, significant protests, challenges left, right, and center in New Brunswick, and likewise now in Saskatchewan. In fact, the provincial advocate for children has indicated that they need to review it because the provincial advocate for children was not consulted. The Canadian Civil Liberties Organization said that they're going to review it to see if it's compliant with law and human rights law, because they suspect that it may not be. But essentially, it's the same thing we're seeing in particular out of the States. You know, any changes to how anyone is addressed has to go to parents first. And there are parents of trans people, about 400 people showed up to the educational secretary of Saskatchewan's offices this last week and protested, along with a whole range of organizations. And, you know, there was a great piece in the CBC about this, and they're saying, look, I am very, very open, but my children who came out as trans talk to their teacher first, because they knew that that was a trusting relationship that they could have before they were 100% sure that it's me. And Scott Moe, the premier of Saskatchewan, was asked multiple times, you know, who are these experts that you've consulted? You keep saying that we've consulted experts. And he said, well, the parents are experts. And I've spoken to some parents. And it's like, I get it. Parents are definitely very invested in the lives and futures of their children. I'm not questioning that at all. But we wouldn't, I hope no parent would just trust the education to a person who happened to birth a human with no other qualifications. You know what I mean? Like, I think educational policy should be a little bit more informed than just having given birth. You know what
I
mean?
Well, here's the process that I think is the best one. This is something that they were starting to do about 15 years ago. We were starting to do it, and then we edged back from the cliff of jumping into the pool of sanity for once. But anyway, there are thousands of school boards around the world, not just in the Anglosphere, just all over the place. And all of them have different methodologies and frameworks on how to teach sex ed, relationships, gender, whatever, to children or teens, or, you know, different frameworks. And when you start, what you teach, blah, blah, blah. Basically, just go around the world and find the outcomes 20 years later. So not the kids themselves, because that's, you know, people are all wrapped up in their own framework about what's right, what's right, what's wrong, what should we do, what should we not do, and just look 20 years later and say which group has the lowest rates of STIs, which one has the lowest rates of teenage pregnancy, which one has the lowest rates of sexual assault, which one has the highest rates of happy relationships, and just work backwards.
Are you suggesting an evidence-based approach?
Oh my God!
And this is stop the presses, folks. You're suggesting, evidence based, and this is my point. I'm like, look, you know, if
and I can even tell you that when they did that, they found the baton passed back and forth between Sweden and the Netherlands for about 30 years, because it depended on which group you're talking. But there's also generational and cultural issues, politics, blah blah blah. Broadly speaking, it was those two groups. And they had a very similar outline of, like, kids learn plumbing. They just learn what their bodies are and how they function. Middle school, they start learning a little bit more about relationships. High school, they talk about sex. And then late high school, they talk about actual dating relationships and consent and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they had like I'm grossly oversummarizing it, but they did have, like, both of them general same framework. And neither of them shied away from talking about normal, healthy adult stuff with kids, but they also had a very strong idea of, like, gating it bit by bit by bit. And you could talk about the philosophy behind it, whatever you want, but in the end, the results are there. They have the lowest rates of teen pregnancy, STIs, and sexual assault in these countries. So, I mean,
that's a win.
Yeah, because we would theoretically, it would be great if Saskatchewan also had the lowest rates of sexually transmitted infections and bloodborne infections, bloodborne diseases, as well as, you know, sexual assaults and so on. You know, I think you're right. Let's aim for what is proven to work.
Yes.
Instead of reacting with the what is now really just fundamentally a political football. You know, it is Jaden Essence-Hall going, look over there. And distracting.
And so many people are pushing a thing because their side pushes that thing, not because of they've sat down to think about it, or they've sat down to look at what are the outcomes of that in the long term. Just say, okay, politically neutral,
mm-hmm.
philosophically neutral, morally neutral. Who has the best? I mean, that's utilitarianism, and some people have problems with that. But just what has the best outcomes? What has the least bad outcomes?
A part of me feels like, would we say that health policy should be decided by people who have been in hospitals? Not anyone who's ever worked in a hospital knows anything about health. Just, I visited an ER once. I think it should go like this. You know, it just, we can do better. We know how to do better.
Should be informed by that.
Oh, definitely informed.
Yeah, I've been going to the hospital a lot lately for my eyes, and in the entire hospital, they have one restaurant, and it's Tim Hortons.
And it closes at 3 p.m., yeah.
Well, also, they have a gastroenterology department, so if you cannot process gluten, lactose, if you're halal, if you can't process fats, if you can't process refined sugars, all the reasons why you'd go to a gastro department, you cannot eat in that hospital. I mean, that's not a medical professional thing. That is a user thing. So, I mean, the inputs from the parents,
absolutely,
are critical.
And I agree. I think any parents should 100% be consulted in the formation of educational policy, as should the children. You know, Canada is a signatory to the International Convention on the Rights of the Child. Children have rights. And we sometimes forget about that. But also, there are people who have dedicated their lives to studying models that have worked, such as Sweden and Denmark, and how those models could be applied in Canada. And I think these are the folks in Congress that we should be, Congress meaning a group of people, not the U.S. Governance system, that we should be looking to for this. I don't know. There's a lot going on, and we have run out of time to dive into it. we are playing now with Forever Is Not a Poem, and this is a great trance by Young Dead One. And I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening. Thank you.